Welcome to the 2016 WCHL Community Forum, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Our annual forum features Chapelboro's movers and shakers debating the big issues affecting our community and you. And it begins now.
Higher education is at a crossroads both nationwide and here in North Carolina, but then again, higher education is always at a crossroads. That is our topic this hour. I'm Aaron Keck. I'll be your moderator. And to address the challenges in our colleges and universities, I'm joined by four distinguished panelists. First of all, UNC Faculty Chair Bruce Cairns. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Durham Tech President Bill Ingram. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
UNC student and Daily Tar Heel reporter Haley Fowler. Haley, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
And finally, UNC alum, education reporter, WCHL alum as well, and director of communications for the John Locke Foundation, Mitch Kokai. Thanks for being here again.
Thanks for having me.
So if you're listening out there, you're listening to the WCHL Community Forum. We've got a lot of questions this hour, and we'll have a lot to talk about. But if you've got questions for our panelists anytime over the course of this hour or anytime over the course of the day, you can tweet them to us. Just use the hashtag WCHL Forum. We'll try to get your questions on the air as soon as possible. Let's begin by turning the microphone over to Bruce Cairns. Dr. Cairns, give us a sense of the State of the Union at UNC. We're always talking about UNC issues, whether it's funding or accessibility or the university's reputation in the wake of the Weinstein Report. In the midst of that all, applications are steadily on the rise. Carol Fold talked about this last hour. Grant funding is still coming in. UNC hasn't really moved on any of the national rankings. As an institution, how are we doing?
Well, as a great public research university, we're doing extremely well. We face a lot of challenges, but there's also a lot of opportunity. I think people are quite enthusiastic about embracing those challenges and help lead the state through these difficult times. And you heard earlier from our chancellor, and you'll hear from other members of our faculty and community. I think that we're serving our purpose to be the public university for the people of the state of North Carolina.
Same question over to Bill Ingram at Durham Tech. Community colleges are becoming more and more integral to higher education, and they already were to begin with. How are we doing at Durham Tech?
I think Durham Tech's doing very well also. I think that that community colleges are in the national forefront in a way they haven't been ever, and certainly that's beneficial. I think that the current environment in Raleigh, the current leadership there recognizes the value of community colleges both as a place for skills training for 21st century jobs, but also increasingly as the entree to a baccalaureate education. So I think that at the state level, community colleges are doing very, very well, and Durham Tech's uniquely positioned because we serve two counties, Durham and Orange County, where higher education is valued and appreciated as really the central focus. And so so we're in a great place. We're happy to be where we are.
Good place for faculty, too. I teach a class there, so you're my other boss.
Very good.
WCHL. Haley Fowler, you're reporting on education. You're also a student yourself, graduating in 2 weeks, right?
Yes, I am.
How is UNC doing?
I think, obviously, you said it already, higher education is at a bit of a crossroads, but it always is. There's concern about accessibility and tuition, but I don't think the state of our higher education in North Carolina is at all faltering. I'm proud of the education I'll be getting from UNC, despite what complications have riddled my 4 years there. I'm proud of being alum of the Daily Tar Heel as well, but I guess, I don't know, I think there's always room for improvement.
Any particular place for improvement?
Probably accessibility, but I think that's been a discussion that's been ongoing for years, and with the spiking tuition rates, that's obviously something that's been of increasing concern.
Mitch Kokai, turning to you, you're sort of an outsider without the specific position at the university, so how is UNC changing? How should UNC be changing?
Well, I think UNC is going to be struggling with some of the same things that other public universities and even the private universities are in the years ahead, and that is, how do you take something that has a long tradition of serving the public, educating its young people, and adapt to the fact that there are many other ways to do similar sorts of things based on technology, based on the changing world. And UNC obviously brings a lot to the table because it has a long history. It has very talented workforce. It attracts great students, has great research facilities, and it's going to be interesting to see how the university adapts to the fact that there are some things you can learn by going to YouTube. There are some things that you can learn more easily by attending a class at a community college. And in fact, that's been one of the interesting things that we've seen in the last few years is folks in Raleigh, where I hang out most of the time, looking at education and saying, well, how can we make this the best for the students so that it's least costly for them and also getting them the most of what they need? And that's not always a four-year degree where you're sitting in a classroom for that entire 4 years. Sometimes it's a mix of community college classes, four-year university classes. In the future, it may be more of a mix of things that you get from the internet while living at home and doing some work. So that's going to be something that all of these universities, including a university as great as UNC, is going to have to tackle.
Got a lot to talk about this hour. We're obviously not going to get to it all. Again, if you're listening out there, you can send us questions. Use the hashtag WCHL forum, and we'll try to get them on the air. Let's start, and I'm going to throw the floor open to anyone who wants to speak, but in the absence of a hand in the air, we'll start with Bruce Cairns. Let's start by talking about Margaret Spellings as the new UNC system president. We do this for him every single year. When last we met, last April, the search process was still ongoing. We didn't know who it was going to be. Now we do. She's on the job. There have been quite a few protests that have been ongoing since well before she took office. And the protests are ongoing even as she's still on her campus visiting tour. The 100 days are still, the first 100 days of her tenure still ongoing. So what do you see as, agenda is kind of a loaded word, but what do you see as Margaret Spellings' the role that she sees for herself at the UNC system? What's the legacy that she seems to want to leave? What is the legacy that she should be working to leave, and is she going to be able to do her job effectively considering the likelihood that these protests are going to be ongoing for some time? Bruce Cairns first.
Well, I think that she's absolutely going to be able to do her job. We have a structure in our state that governs our UNC system. We have enormous support from the citizens of the state, and the amount of money that we get for our students and for our universities is tremendous. And so our obligation is to follow that structure from the General Assembly, who are elected by our citizens, to the Board of Governors, who select our president, who is then oversees the 17 campus system, and then through our Board of Trustees and our chancellors. I think that when you listen to President Spellings talk about what she would like to see happen with the UNC system, I think it's really about allowing us to continue to be the great public university system, perhaps I would argue the greatest public university system in the land. And, you know, I think that we have had a number of people who've supported her before she arrived, President Ross himself, as well as Governor Hunt, who sat on her commission earlier on. I think that we publicly welcomed President Spellings at our faculty council meeting. We have met with her when she came to the UNC Chapel Hill campus. I think that one of the great things about a public university is that there's transparency and an opportunity for people to express their views, and if they're differing, as you mentioned, that crossroads issue, I think that we have to allow people to have that, just as if we may have some critics about the way the system is run. They also have an opportunity to express their views. I think that helps sharpen our focus and allow us to fulfill our obligation to the people. We are uniquely positioned as a state and as a university system and with the community college system, and in fact with our colleagues over in the Locke Foundation or the Pope Center, a way to really hone what we're trying to do to make sure that we are fulfilling our primary purpose was to serve the people of the state. And I think that's what President Spellings wants to do.
Other thoughts? Haley, you were frantically writing notes there. So,
well, it's obviously an issue we've covered in great depth at the Daily Tar Heel. I think if we talked about this a year ago, it was a question mark what the system was going to do without Ross. It was a surprise that he was leaving in the first place. So Margaret Spellings was at an impasse when she was elected. Unfortunately, she kind of came into a harsh climate and was blamed a lot for the search process that wasn't exactly necessarily her fault in any capacity. I think you asked about what her agenda should be, quote unquote, but I think for students it's becoming increasingly important that she continue to build their trust and reach out to them personally. I know the students that have been protesting don't feel like they've had a voice, and they haven't had access to the Board of Governors or Margaret Spellings herself. And I think they're working on opening that line of communication and dialogue, and that's something that should be a priority moving forward if they want to continue to engage the students in the conversation of how to govern the system.
Mitch Kokai.
I'd like to throw in the element of politics here, just because that's one of the things that that we spend a lot of our time focusing on at the Locke Foundation is what happens with the General Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that, that UNC is going to benefit from as a system, and UNC Chapel Hill will benefit from this as part of that, is that Margaret Spellings comes in as someone that the Republicans who run the General Assembly will listen to. For whether it was a good or a bad idea, I think a lot of folks who were over there in the halls of the legislative building on Jones Street saw Tom Ross as part of Democratic establishment. I think most of them respected him. They didn't have any real problems with him, but there was always sort of a bit of a level of distrust that they won't have with Margaret Spellings. And so I think she may come in, not even have any major drastic differences in what she wants to see for the UNC system, but you'll see doors be open more often among the leadership in the General Assembly just because of her pedigree. Now, in terms of what she should be focusing on, I think she has, in talking about accessibility, affordability, been focusing on some important things, also making sure that there's efficiency. I think a lot of people who look at the university and say, what, we spend a lot of money on this system, have to like the fact that one of the first things she did was study that general administration and ways to cut back. Because the money that's going to pay people sitting just down that road from UNC Chapel Hill is money that's not going to pay faculty to build up research facilities, to actually do things on campuses for students. So I think that was one step in the right direction.
And we're still very early in the initial budget process, but following up on that, and you mentioned the doors opening for Margaret Spellings in a way that they might not otherwise for someone like Tom Ross, do you expect that to translate into a different-looking budget for UNC this year and beyond than would otherwise happen maybe under someone like Ross?
I don't know that there's going to be a huge difference, but I think it does help the leadership of the UNC system really make a strong case for what it wants. I mean, I don't think leaders in the General Assembly said, oh, Tom Ross, let's close the door, but I think they did have, at least some of them had, a level of apprehension.
Mm-hmm.
And if they already had concerns about UNC and the UNC system, then perhaps they said, well, you know, this is a reason for us to go along with a proposed cut or maybe not accept a proposed expansion. Perhaps now they'll take a few more minutes to listen to it before they decide whether yes or no for more money for UNC.
Bill Ingram and then Bruce Cairns.
I think it's going to be important for President Spellings to really also focus on relationships. You know, she's not the only new higher education leader in North Carolina. Tommy Williamson will be the new community college system president July 1st. We'll be talking about this a little bit later, I assume, but there's an expectation among the General Assembly to build stronger relationships between the two higher education systems, community colleges and the university system. And so her ability to work in partnership with Dr. Williamson and others, and for her to encourage relationships between the campuses of the university and the community colleges, I think will be essential to her success.
How much room for growth is there now in terms of that relationship between the two systems?
I think that we have a strong relationship, but there's always room for improved relationships. You can never have a perfect relationship. And I think especially given the fact that we talk about the higher education system, but it's really three loosely coupled systems in North Carolina, there's always the opportunity for improvement. But I think that we're starting from a strong base.
Bruce Cairns.
Well, I would agree with President Ingram there. You know, we have a really unique state here in North Carolina with our systems of higher education. And there's always room for improvement for the university system and its relationship with community colleges, as well as the individual universities within the system amongst themselves. For example, UNC Chapel Hill and North Carolina State, and then UNC Chapel Hill and Durham Tech and the other schools across the system. I think it presents an enormous opportunity for us to really leverage the investments that have been made and to provide the kinds of efficiencies and effectiveness that we hear our colleagues talk about. I would say that, first of all, Tom Ross, I think, from the faculty's perspective at UNC Chapel Hill, he's still a member of our faculty, was an outstanding president. And as Haley mentioned, there were some concerns about that process. But now we're moving forward, and we have President Spellings. And I've heard her talk about the same sort of issues as Mitch mentioned, that President Ross had mentioned. And I think that when we talk about accessibility and accountability and affordability and efficiency, one of the challenges that we face is what are we trying to accomplish? So I'm just going to, if I may, respond a little bit to what Mitch said earlier about what you're supposed to learn and where you're supposed to head in public higher education. I think that adapting to technologies, things like YouTube and the Internet and perhaps the roles of what you can get with a two-year degree in community college versus what you could get at a four-year school needs to take into account, at least from our perspective at UNC Chapel Hill, what it means to have the oldest, what I would argue, greatest public university in the land, where we're really uniquely committed to the people of the state and in our partnerships. And so having a four-year school where people are able to think and become leaders of the next generation and learn how to become a better citizen, loosely defined, really requires that we embrace and understand and appreciate the value of the liberal arts and the humanities and just learning how to grow up and to become civic-minded. Sometimes that's difficult to measure with a metric like you would in some of the other disciplines. And, of course, I'm a physician. But as director of the Burn Center, you know, we deal with humanity and the humanities, and it's a constantly evolving issue. If you look at the issues that we're facing in our state politically, as was mentioned earlier, across the nation with a number of issues, diversity and race and sort of the world challenges that we face, developing better systems is really important. However, I would say that we have to figure out how to work together and try to leverage all of these great systems and be willing to listen to each other and have civilized conversations and recognize that other people have a point. And as far as politics and Raleigh are concerned, those folks represent the people of the state. And so we have to be able, no matter how much we disagree, to figure out how to work together as we fund these great systems and solve these problems.
I have like 12 follow-ups to that, but before I do, does anyone have anything that they want to add? Yeah, Mitch Kokai.
One quick thing. I think you're exactly right, Dr. Cairns, in talking about the notion of UNC Chapel Hill and the other universities within the system being about the well-rounded individual, making sure that they leave the university system or the university with a degree, able to think about important issues, able to tackle them with an intellectual grounding. For the parents who are paying the tuition bills, some of them are saying, that's great, I want my kid to have a job. And so I think we need to think about the ways in which you're going to be able to address both things.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Make sure that the people get the intellectual grounding. Make sure that they have the great benefits that they get from spending the time at Chapel Hill. But also address that parent's concern that, hey, after 4, 5, 6 years of spending this money, is my child going to be able to get a job?
Especially after 6 years of spending
money. Exactly. So, and I think that's something that has been a struggle in recent years and is probably going to continue to be, but something that all of these branches of higher education are going to need to deal with.
So let's turn to the question of the purpose of higher education, because I think we're all agreed that there are several purposes, right? The purpose is to be able to go out and get a job today and then be adaptable to the job market down the road. The purpose is to be a better person. The purpose is to be a better citizen. The class I teach at Durham Tech is American government, and the crux of that class is, man, power is really difficult to stop. So the way to stop it, the way to limit it and control it, is to make sure that the people in power are good citizens who care, right? So we need higher education to do all of those things. Is there a trade-off? Do we have to give up on something in order to get more of something else, or is there a way to pursue all of those at the same time? Bruce Cairns. I'm just going to go to Bruce Cairns, no matter what.
Well, I keep raising my hand for those of you wondering why. I'm chomping at the bit. No, I think the answer is yes, you can do all of those things. Again, what you have to do is be willing to acknowledge that they're all important and then figure out how to accomplish those goals in the environments that you have and then create opportunities for collaboration. That's really what I see President Ingram from Durham Tech's perspective. We have a fantastic community college system. And we work with, so for example, our fire service personnel, our EMTs, they all go to community college. We have nurses who come out of the community college system. They work with us. So there's a way to address the issues of getting a job. I think the issue for that, again, going back to what Mitch said about the parents asking for the job, I think that what we need to remember, too, is the students are now adults. What do they want to do? Many of our students are socially conscious about the world they live in and the world around them. And, of course, that's defined by different aspects. So it's not always for them about how can I get a job, make a lot of money. But even the people who run our industry, the people who are working on Wall Street, or Steve Jobs, for example, they were all huge proponents of the liberal arts education because it taught them how to think. Or it put the world in a perspective. So, for example, when we look at our political turmoil, perhaps, having a good understanding of history, being able to debate and discuss issues, and sort of understanding those areas are really important. Now, on the other hand, at UNC Chapel Hill, in the medical school, we have the Department of Allied Health. You know, that's where our audiologists come from, our physical therapists come from. Of course, we have a number of professional schools. We have the business school, we have school of government, law school. So UNC Chapel Hill is uniquely prepared to answer that question because we have so many different units that actually provide people who can have a professional degree or be one of these civic-minded folks. But because we're so diverse in our goals and aspirations, that presents an enormous opportunity for us to work throughout all 100 counties and all through the different systems and jobs. I mean, when we talk about UNC Chapel Hill, for example, we have a number of people who do research. We have a number of people who do global service. And we're increasing the number of internship opportunities to address the issue of being able to get a job. But it's a constant push and pull.
Let me turn it to Haley, because you're a student right now. You're about to graduate. What do you want out of college? What do you want to have gotten out of higher education? What do the other people who are at UNC want to get out of higher education? What are you getting and what are you not getting?
That's a loaded question.
That's like all questions. I'm sorry.
I can't answer
just
for
just know
every,
that the faculty chair is right here
yeah,
as well.
No pressure.
Yeah.
I can't answer for every student at Carolina. Mm-hmm. I think Dr. Gaines is correct in saying that it's a very diverse school. There's a lot of different facets within it. I'm in the journalism school. I will graduate from that school. It's hard to say. I guess, like, my parents, there's an obvious concern for me getting a job, and I think he's also correct in saying I'm 22 years old. My parents are not holding my hand as I apply for jobs anymore. They're saying you should be applying for jobs, and they're letting me tell them all the times I get rejected and supporting me, which is great. But I think it's really up to the students to a certain extent. You can't put us in a box and say you have to learn, like, these specific skills to be successful in life after graduation, which I think is the pressure that comes from forcing people into STEM fields sometimes. And if that's what you want to do, that's great. But I just don't think every student wants that. That wasn't what I wanted out of my higher education experience. I appreciated a liberal arts degree. I want to be able to go into the world and think critically and use my skills in a diverse area. If that makes any sense.
Let me actually break it down. In 4 years or 3.9 years at UNC, do you think that UNC has done a good job training you for the job market?
Yes. I think because the J School is great and I love it, but I also worked at the Daily Target. There are practical skills involved in everything that I've done. So it wasn't just my education that was helpful. I mean, they pushed me in the right direction. They gave me the resources to go out and get that practical skills so that I could have a degree and also experience to point to.
And then the second half of that, is UNC providing what is necessary for you and anyone who goes to UNC to emerge as a better person as well?
I would argue yes. I don't think anyone there is telling us to be terrible humans. I know
there are some political theory classes.
Yeah, there might be a couple of philosophy classes, I guess. I think there's definitely an encouragement to think critically, and sometimes we get criticized for being perhaps too quote-unquote liberal and not allowing for those discussions to ensue, but I don't think that's always the case. I think people are really eager to get to know other opinions on other sides of the aisle.
Let me follow up with Bill Ingram.
I agree with Dr. Cairns that I think that we can do it all. And I think that UNC Chapel Hill and the university system is a tremendous resource. I am concerned about the larger conversation these days about the role of education, not just higher education, but education in general, as being essentially vocationally focused and a push toward getting people to decide what they want to do and pursuing those opportunities earlier and earlier and earlier in their lives, eighth graders, seventh graders. I think there's value to that, but I think the best teachers are those who encourage people to find things in them that they don't see initially. The best teachers are those who help us expand our horizons. And I think the role of education should include certainly preparing people to be meaningfully employed and economically being part of the economy, but also being part of society, and also pushing yourself to find your passion. It means trying things and failing things, and I think that as we talk about how education should focus more and more on getting people into the workplace and that's it, we're losing the opportunity for people to learn and to grow.
And I think we've got to take a break here in a second, and I want to ask Bill Ingram one question. Mitch Kokai has a follow-up, and then we'll take our break. We've got a lot of people, I think of the community college system as being primarily vocational tech. Mm-hmm. So how is Durham Tech and community colleges in general set, or how are community colleges in general set up to help people explore and try and fail?
Certainly. Well, I think that it's becoming harder and harder and harder for us to do that based on national and state policies. But as an open door admission institution, we allow people to come in and try things and fail. I think that one of our strongest programs at Durham Tech is our transfer program. We send 75 or 80 people to UNC Chapel Hill every year, and as a group, they do very, very well relative to native students. But at the same time, we are providing skills training in a variety of areas, from healthcare to public safety to business and computer information technology. So we are a comprehensive institution, which means people can easily move back and forth between programs and explore to find what they want to do.
And Mitch Kokai, you get the last word.
As the person who first brought up the idea of the parents want to make sure the kids get the college degree, I want to be clear that I think liberal arts education is incredibly valuable as well. If I think back in my college career, the history classes, psychology classes, things that had nothing to do with journalism probably are playing a more valuable role now than the technical classes that I took for journalism. I think one of the things that the university system and to some extent community college system could benefit from is finding a good way to make the case to the people of North Carolina that these things are valuable.
Right.
Don't just treat this as a way to give people jobs. Here's why liberal arts education is very important.
We got to take a break. We will be back with more of our higher education panel. You're listening to the WCHL Community Forum here on WCHL with Mitch Kokai, Bill Ingram, Bruce Cairns, and Haley Fowler. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. If you have questions for us, you can use the hashtag WCHL Forum on Twitter. Tweet us those questions using that hashtag, and we'll try to get them on the air as soon as possible. We'll be back with more from the higher education panel of the WCHL Community Forum.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit.
To foodies.
To innovation.
To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
Summer is rapidly approaching, and fall will be here before you know it. Need some extra courses to help you prepare for college? Need to complete your high school diploma or get a GED? Looking for training or certification to help you get that dream job? Classes begin May 16th, so visit durhamtech.edu and search summer registration. Schedule a meeting with an academic advisor who will give you access to our web registration system. You'll be amazed at the great selection of interesting courses you'll find. And get ready to do great things.
Know your rights. Did you know housing discrimination is against the law? Fair housing means that you have the right to choose a place to live without regard to race, age, color, religion, sex, national origin, veteran status, disability, or familial status. If you or someone you know has experienced housing discrimination, please contact the Human Relations Commission at 919-245-2487. That's 919-245-2487.
Welcome back to the 2016 WCHL Community Forum presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Thanks to our sponsors, Brooke Pierce, Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership, Durham Tech, Jersey Mike's, Kidzoo Children's Museum, Maria Finnegan Fitness, Molly Maid of Chapel Hill, and Orange County Government. Once again, here's Aaron Keck.
And we're talking about higher education this hour. Again, if you've got questions, you can tweet them to us. Use the hashtag WCHLForum, and we'll try to get those on the air. We're joined by Bill Ingram, the president of Durham Tech, Haley Fowler, senior at UNC and writer for the Daily Tar Heel, Mitch Kokai from the John Locke Foundation, and UNC faculty chair Bruce Cairns. And Dr. Cairns, I know you wanted to respond to what Mitch Kokai said at the very end of our first half hour. I also want to follow up on a point that you made earlier about the role of higher education in terms of producing better citizens. I want to ask how you measure that. How do you measure success as far as that goes? But you had a comment as well.
Well, first, I've really enjoyed this time that we've been spending and the distinguished panelists. I really appreciated what Haley had to say. She really is able to articulate what this is all about. It's really about our students in the future. So I think perhaps she can help answer that question as well as I can. I think the other comment I wanted to make about what Mitch had said is that we actually agree on a lot of things in this state. It doesn't mean that we're perfect, as has been mentioned many times, and that, again, it's about making our case to the people of the state. When you look at the people and the wide diversity of jobs and roles that they have and the amount of support they provide our various systems through the state budget, they want to know, is it worth it? Is it worth it to us? Is it worth it to the state? Is it worth it to my sons and daughters, the people in my family, to go there? And it's our obligation to explain to them, yes, it is. That it's not just about getting a job, but it's about becoming a better thinker. It's about being a better state. It's also about being responsive to their concerns. And so it's not just a one-way street. It's a two-way street. And I think that when the public university was created over 200 years ago here in the state of North Carolina, it was always envisioned as that partnership, that education would provide greater opportunity for us to be a better state and solve the problems that really are the most pressing, not just here, but in the nation and in the world. And I think that UNC Chapel Hill, the other schools in the system, the community college system, and then all of the people who are interested in higher education in the state of North Carolina can help us do that. So how do you measure success? I think that in some ways that's pretty easy. I have to take board exams, and I have to be competent, and I have to pass those exams to be certified. There are some examples where that's clearly the case. How do you judge Picasso? How do you judge Mozart? How do you judge Faulkner? I think that you learn something from these experiences that make us a greater society. How do you learn from jazz or from theater? And how do you measure those metrics? And I think that there are some traditional views about being able to communicate those. You have to be able to write about it. You have to be able to make your case. You have to be thoughtful. But if you're going to say that everything has to be measured by a metric, then I think you're really limiting the value of education and you're limiting the value of what it means to be a greater citizen. They're all important. But I don't know if I've answered your question.
Follow-ups on that? Mitch Kokai.
I will say one thing that I have learned, and there's one metric that if I'm listening to Art Blakey's Jazz Messengers while driving from Chapel Hill to Raleigh or vice versa, I tend to speed up by about 5 miles per hour, so maybe I shouldn't do that.
Other thoughts? Haley.
Just to add on to what Dr. Cairns was saying, I think it's really challenging to quantitate that measurement, and I think that's what he was getting at as well. They love to ask us, like, what your job is after graduation, what salary you're going to get, and I'm sure 5 years, 10 years down the road, they're going to keep asking me that, and hopefully it'll improve, maybe, we'll see. But I think at the end of the day, that's not really a measurement of success always, and you can ask those people 5 years from now how great they're doing on Wall Street, but whether or not they're happy or happy, successful in yeah. life is not going to look the same.
Mm-hmm. Bill Ingram, follow up on that?
Well, no, I think that you know, everything that Dr. Karen said is absolutely correct, but I also understand the tension because it is a fairly substantial monetary investment that the state makes and the nation makes in higher education. And there's an expectation that pay off in some way. We live in a society that measures a lot of things by in terms of return on investment. So that balance is really a challenging one we have to strike, but we have to strike it.
Aaron?
Chris Stearns?
So I completely agree with what Bill has said, and in fact, that tension has been an age-old tension in public mm-hmm. higher
yep.
education.
Yep.
And I think that the ones who are, I don't know if I would describe them as critics or maybe overseers, making sure that we're fulfilling our obligation to the people of the state, are really trying to make sure that we are fulfilling that obligation to those people, that it broadly defined, and that we're not so narrowly focused on what we think the answer to that question is, but mm-hmm. that we hear other voices, and that those other voices, particularly the ones that are investing
right.
in the university systems or in the community college systems, that we're being responsive to that, that there's a practical reality, because people need a place to live, they need a place, you know, they need to be able to eat, they would like to raise families. You know, being a civic-minded citizen means that you have to be engaged in that civic process, and mm-hmm. that means having a job and paying taxes for many people, not necessarily at the highest level. It's a partnership of sorts. And so I think that's why I said earlier, even though we're facing challenges, represents enormous opportunity if we can keep that dialogue open.
Mitch Kokai.
One of the trickiest parts of this discussion is that we have to remember that, especially in higher education, this applies somewhat to K-12 or pre-K-12, but especially higher education, the number one beneficiary is the person, yeah. him or herself. That person's going to get the most benefit. But there is also a social benefit. And you have to find a way to quantify for the people yeah. who are spending the dollars, you know, what's the social benefit? What's yeah. the benefit to society from doing this beyond just the benefit to the students like Haley and her classmates who are going to be entering the world? They get a benefit. We know that. How does society benefit from what we're teaching them? And that's a hard thing to quantify.
Bill Ingram.
Yeah, the extent to which, just to follow up on that, the extent to which education is a public good, I think, is really the challenge that we are continuing to face, and how we make that case to the public is deeply important. And I think we're seeing, in the last several years, a shift in the political environment that suggests that it is more of a private good than a public good. That tension is always going to be there. And when 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when the political pendulum swings back, we'll see what happens. But that notion of the extent to which Haley's education benefits me and the extent to which I should pay for education because of that is really at the crux of the matter.
Bruce Kern?
Yeah, so I don't want to say I'm distressed about the concept that politics are such a big part of this discussion, because I actually think that tension is interesting, and it's certainly a reality that we face in this state. I think maybe not uniquely, but certainly it seems to be more evident than, say, in other states. But we also have one of the greatest public education systems in the country. And so what I would like to see happen is less a discussion about distrust, we had heard earlier about, say, President Ross, and more a dialogue of trying to understand each other's perspective. And by the way, that's a two-way street. I think that there has been some frustration that, and I'll just speak for our on the Hill, that we may, Chapel Hill, that is, we may not have been as responsive, perhaps, as to the concerns of the people of the state in some political spectrums. But I don't think that that's actually true. There are a number of examples where that's not the case. But so, for example, in the Burn Center, where I work primarily, it doesn't matter what your political affiliation is. We're going to take care of you no matter what. It doesn't matter what your gender, race, any of this. It's just you need us, and it's in our partnership. And I think that's true of the university system as well. And so I think that if we can say that all of these issues that we've talked about are things that we all care about, and we can communicate with each other about this and realize that we're going to have some, I don't know how to define this, common sense meeting of the minds, so that we can continue to do what everybody wants us to be, which is efficient, effective, and the best we possibly can be, but be open to perhaps to what that means as we kind of try to address these challenges. And I'm kind of wondering if Haley, listening to the three of the washed up old men over here, what you're the future, what you think about this conversation. I'm sorry to take your job.
No, please do. I get paid no matter what, so.
What is it exactly? What
we're discussing how to make the case to the people. You're from North Carolina,
yeah.
Correct? And we're talking about how to make this university system be as effective as it can in an environment that's, you know, politically charged. And how can we connect with the people? How can we, perhaps as the adults in the room, sometimes we don't behave like that. How can we do a better job of really articulating what we're trying to do? From your perspective, how can we better connect with the people of the state so that they can believe that this investment they're making, very substantial investment, is worthwhile?
Well, I think that's challenging to talk to from a student's perspective, only because we kind of get caught up in a bubble at school. And I think there's a disconnect between us and the citizens of the state, which I guess is getting at the root of the problem there. That we aren't able to communicate with them what a great education we've had and what we're going out into the world to do. And a lot of students, I think, don't end up staying in the state after they graduate, which also makes that a bit more challenging to communicate as well. I don't know if I'm answering this the correct way or what you really kind of want me to say here, but it's hard. I think it's a really hard question to get at.
And I think it's a difficult question again to quantify, right? Because
right. Yeah.
there's the question of like, what is it that sends the message to people that higher education is a benefit for them? And I think it's about telling that story. Yeah, Mr. Cooper.
And remember, throwing us back into the political arena here, prior to the 2010 election, especially in the North Carolina Senate, but to some extent in the North Carolina House as well, there were people who were in the top leadership positions who said, UNC system, yeah, whatever you want, mm-hmm. you got it. I mean, the top echelons within the state Senate, which most people would agree, were where things really hit the road, especially after Jim Hunt left the governor's office. Those folks were on board pretty much with anything UNC system wanted to do. And I think that was a blessing and a curse, the blessing being that, hey, you got the resources you wanted. The curse was you didn't necessarily have to learn to make the case because you knew Mark Basnight and Tony Ram were going to say yes. I think the Republicans who are in charge now in the House and Senate are very amenable to supporting higher education and K through 12 public education as well when they get blowback from their political opponents. They always say, look, we increase funding for these systems. We are continuing on that same path. They are just cast a little bit more critical eye and saying, look, we've got other priorities too. We have things like Medicaid that we've had to spend more money on than we expected. So if we're going to continue making those investments in UNC, in the community college system, in K-12, we got to have a reason to do it. We're not just going to say, yeah, we know you're good, here's some more money. And I think that's why in recent years you've seen at the individual campus level and system-wide level more of a discussion of, all right, how do we make this case? How do we ensure that people know that it's important for people to come through our system, get a liberal arts education, prepare themselves for society, because it's going to not only benefit them but also benefit the state as a whole and their local communities.
What actually is the answer to that question? How do you tell that story in a way that will sell in Raleigh in the same way that it sells on that hill in the same way that it sells on this hill?
So if I knew that answer, I'd have one of those high six-figure jobs that they have in the UC system.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I think one of the challenges is that higher education and the universities in particular – Undergraduate education is an important piece of what they do. It's not all of what they do. It's not all of the university. And it is, but undergrad education is the most visible piece of what the university does. So when faculty, I've had conversations with members of the General Assembly who simply don't understand what the role of a faculty member at a university is and think it should be undergraduate education, period, forgetting the notion of research, forgetting the notion of service, forgetting the notion of developing new knowledge, acquiring new knowledge, preserving new knowledge, which is really the role of the university. So there's a fundamental, I think, misunderstanding among some about what a university is about. Now, that's the question. How you answer that, I don't know. Maybe bring a senator to work day or something like that so that there's a better understanding of the different roles, the multiple roles that are all deeply important to the state that a university is a part of.
Bruce Cairns and then Ms. Kokai.
Well, I think I'll go first because it was real quick, but just to follow up on that point, I think we have an example of that right now. You work at the Byrne Center. I think people who are familiar with the Byrne Center may not think of that as UNC. I mean, they think of that as a hospital. They think of that as it obviously is a very important part of UNC, but when people think of UNC, they think Tar Heel basketball or students protesting or people walking through the main campus, and they don't necessarily always think of the various elements as we were just discussing.
Bruce Cairns?
No, I think that's right, and it's about educating people about all of the things that we do and also having them be open to that being something that we should support. But from politics, it's all local. Mm-hmm. And I think being able to I was talking with one of our distinguished faculty members, Bill Ferris, about this issue. And he said, you know, it's really about showing the grandparents what this means. Because the people of this state own this university. And if you ask them, they'll tell you that. They're very proud of it. And they want it to be accountable and effective. But they want to know what is in it, not just for them, but for their family or their communities or their county. And I think that it's not just about undergraduate education, as you'd mentioned, and we had heard that we had two Nobel laureates at Carolina, and the kinds of advances that they're providing allow us to address the way we deal with rare diseases, for example, which we are leading the nation in addressing. And so there are many different ways for these interconnected issues to really make our case. But we have to be able to first start by just having a conversation where we can talk and agree on these basic principles that we all want to do the best we can and be efficient about it, but also recognize that we have to speak in the language that people understand. And if we don't understand that we have to go out into the communities and be able to relate to people and hear what they have to say and respect it, then you can talk all you want, but it won't be very well received. And so I think it's about, in this very tumultuous time, really creating bridges. And Mitch mentioned President Spellings being able to do that. I think that's true. I think Chancellor Folt, Carol Folt, has done that a lot as well, reaching out to the General Assembly and the Board of Governors, as well as amongst the university systems and the community colleges and the various students throughout these systems. I think it's been about trying to reconnect so that as this critical look takes place, and of course, you know, UNC Chapel Hill just had an opportunity to do a very critical look of our academic programs, and I would submit to you that process makes us a better university because it really forces us to take a close look at our policies and procedures and our ethics and our integrity, and that makes sure that when Haley and the next generation come, that we're fulfilling our duty.
We've got about 5 minutes left, maybe a little bit less, so I want to wrap up, and there's a couple of questions that I want to get to. So let me start with Bill Ingram, specifically the North Carolina GAP program, Guaranteed Admission Program, possible delay until 2018, but as of right now set to take effect next year, would get more students into community colleges, specifically students with the lowest admission criteria who might currently be accepted into the UNC system, would be funneled into community colleges first before potentially moving on to the four-year schools from there. What are your thoughts about that program? Sure. What do you think the effect is going to be on the community college classroom? Are you excited about it? Are you in favor of a delay?
I'm actually in the minority among my colleagues in the community college system. I'm not really in favor of it. I see some real concerns. I think that Chancellor Anderson at Fayetteville State pointed out, perhaps inelegantly, that that what the students who will be affected and the institutions who will be affected the most are the HBCUs. I don't really think that UNC Chapel Hill will be affected much. The student who is marginally admitted to UNC Chapel Hill will end up being on well positioned to go to one of the regional institutions. The students who are going to be impacted are the students who are marginally admitted to the HBCUs. And so I think that that's a challenge. I think the bigger challenge, and this sort of gets back to the idea of conversation and communication, is that this is a policy that's being sort of imposed by the General Assembly. It's not something, it's not a partnership that was built organically between the university system and the community college system. Durham Tech has a very strong partnership with NCCU and a program that's very similar to NCGAP called Eagle Connect, which allows students who have applied to NCCU but not admitted to live on the NCCU campus, pay room and board to NC Central, but take their classes at Durham Tech. That partnership, that program has some problems and challenges, and we're continuing to work through those. But I think that a program or a partnership that is built between institutions is going to be more successful than one that is imposed on us by the General Assembly.
And then we've only got a couple minutes left, so I'm going to let Haley Fowler have the last word. Affordability and accessibility are always issues. When it comes to higher education in general, UNC, of course, prides itself on being one of the most accessible public universities in the nation. There are still issues. People come out of that with a lot of student debt. Speaking for yourself, speaking for what you know about the people that you've gone to school with, what can UNC do better in terms of making college more affordable and more accessible so people aren't leaving with as much student debt as they are?
I think UNC Chapel Hill, like you said, is uniquely situated. I'm kind of getting out lucky with the financial aid I was given over the last 4 years and scholarships and such. And as an in-state student, they've tried really hard to keep our tuition not so high. I think where the struggle comes in is for minority low-income students and out-of-state students, particularly out-of-state students who are not here on scholarship. I have quite a few friends who struggle financially here because they don't have scholarship here and they are only getting so much from the federal and state governments to come here. And they just don't have anything to supplement their living here, really, as a student. So what can we do? I think that's a hard question to answer. I think there needs to be more of a focus on investing in higher education, which is what we've talked about for this entire hour, is how do we prove that it's worth investing in and how do we get the state government behind that? So I don't know. We'll see.
I've got a question for Bruce Cairns and Mitch Kokai on the role of getting good people into higher education as a profession in the first place, given our increasing reliance on adjuncts, but that's going to be an issue next year, too, and we've got to wrap up the hour. So, Bruce Cairns, you want one quick point before we let you go?
Yeah, I'd just like to respond to the accessibility and affordability question. I think, first of all, it's been a priority at Carolina with the Carolina Covenant and the CHIEVE program. I think that as we go through our campaign, just raising more money so that we can help subsidize students. And then the Board of Governors passed a policy where we could only use a certain percentage of tuition money for financial aid. I think allowing us to have some flexibility, and again, it's that partnership and understanding that, because accessibility and affordability is a major priority and a major point of higher education in the public system.
And that's going to have to do it for us this hour. Thanks again to Mitch Kokai, Bruce Cairns, Bill Ingram, and Haley Fowler for a terrific conversation. You can revisit this conversation later on our website, chapelboro.com. We'll be re-airing this over the course of the next couple of weeks. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more to come on the WCHL Community Forum. This is Aaron Keck, and we'll have more after this.
This year's WCHL Community Forum has been presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Thanks again to our sponsors, Brooke Pierce, Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership, Durham Tech, Jersey Mike's, K-12
Kid Zoo Children's Museum, Maria Finnegan Fitness, Molly Maid of Chapel Hill, and Orange County Government.
Hi, I'm Dwight Bassett with Chapel Hill Economic Development, and we're thrilled to be the presenting sponsor for this year's WCHL Community Forum. The Economic Development Office works to attract and retain businesses and jobs in locations convenient to transit and housing, all in an effort to build a sustainable economy in which to live, work, and play. Chapel Hill is open to business and open for business every day of the year. Follow us on Twitter at @CHEconDev. Chapel Hill, right on the edge of the triangle.
Ready to try something new this summer? Check out stand-up paddleboard yoga and fitness with Maria Finnegan Fitness. SUP yoga and SUP fitness classes are offered throughout the Triangle. Maria offers both indoor and outdoor sessions with summer classes beginning in June. Monthly classes as well as private bookings are available. This is a great idea for team building and corporate events. To learn more about SUP yoga and fitness, please visit mariafinnegan.com or email maria@mariafinnegan.com.
Hi, this is Don Rice, owner of the Molly Maid in Chapel Hill. The thought-provoking conversations taking place today on WCHL represents what this community is all about. The panelists are committed to making our community great, just like we are at Molly Maid. For 18 years, our family has been serving yours. My wife, Kathy, and I are proud to employ almost 40 people, doing our small part to keep our community vibrant and, of course, clean. As we support WCHL Community Forum, we hope you'll support our locally owned business by visiting us at mollymaid.com.
Brooks Pierce Law Firm is a proud sponsor of the WCHL Community Forum and a proud supporter of the Chapel Hill Carrboro Chamber of Commerce. Our lawyers strive to provide excellent legal counsel in business and nonprofit matters, including employment, tax-exempt organizations, construction, intellectual property protection, and litigation. Find out how we can help your enterprise at brookspierce.com.
This is Charlie Ferris, owner-operator of Jersey Mike's Subs on Elliott Road in Chapel Hill North. After 5 years, friends often ask if I'm sick of subs yet. The honest truth is no, and I don't think I'll ever tire the best sub sandwich on the planet. But I do have a secret. You can get any one of our mouth-watering subs on a salad. We call it our sub in a tub, and these range from the fresh and light turkey provolone to the protein-packed original Italian. We just leave out the roll and stack your favorite meats and cheeses on a bed of crisp veggies. Come try one today at Jersey Mike's Subs.